Good morning and welcome to the Thursday, December 6th edition of Byers & Company. City Hall Insider, former mayor of Decatur, publisher of the Decatur Tribune, Paul Osborne, in with us for the hour. Plus, we'll check in with Mark Tupper and Tupper on Sports and our first gift of the day today. All of that starts now.
Byers & Company, WSOY 1340 AM, 103.3 FM, streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
Well, it turns out you don't have to pay attention to the drama at the national level. We got plenty of it right here at home with an election that was over a long time ago that still isn't over, and one that's yet to happen, and we don't know what's going to happen. Paul Osborne, the perfect guest for this scenario in the studios, former mayor of Decatur, twice elected by the folks here in the city of Decatur to be mayor, a longtime publisher of the Decatur Tribune, which you can visit at decaturtribune.com. Or a subscription for Christmas. Great idea for folks who are living elsewhere, want to catch up once a week with all the news. Let's start with the sheriff's race, which as far as I'm concerned is still ongoing. I know we've got a declared winner and somebody's sworn in. I think Tony Brown is making a gigantic misstep in strategy here with this whole thing. I think most people have pointed out to the honor of both of these men throughout this entire process. I mean, even when they were running against each other.
Me too.
Before we
yeah.
knew there was going to be, you know, all of this, you know, on election night. But for him to take the tack that, hey, I've been sworn in, I'm sheriff, I'm not going to worry about that other stuff, is a very tone-deaf message to me.
Yeah, I would agree. And I like Tony.
I voted for Tony. I mean, this isn't...
Against him.
No,
yeah.
I think he's got people in his ear. And I just think if you're the guy who says 99 votes isn't a large enough margin of victory to not challenge, how do you now argue that one vote is, especially in light of finding two sealed votes that weren't counted on election?
Which, by one vote, then, Jim,
Root
won.
Yes.
Yeah, so, I mean... Yeah, I believe there should be a full recount, no doubt about it. And I think for Tony's benefit and certainly for Jim Root's
benefit.
And the voters.
And the sheriff's office.
Yeah, we need to clear this up. It will not be cleared up. There needs to be a full recount, and certainly it'll be under scrutiny. There's no question about it by both parties, you know, when this is taking place. And to me, that's an easy call. I feel bad that Tony isn't... receptive to that, because I think for his benefit too, you want to be sure for these questions hanging over your head, or do you want to know for sure? Yeah, I won that race, and even the recount showed I won it.
Yeah, I don't think there can be another way.
No, I don't either. And you know, we've talked about this. Both of these guys are really popular in this community.
They're both really good
and
human
good
beings.
People.
Yeah, and none of this is what I'm saying is disparaging either one of them. I voted for Tony Brown. Clearly on Election Day, I said, that's the guy I want to be my sheriff. But you got to sometimes put that aside and go, what's fair here? And I told you the next day, you know, I wasn't a big fan of recounts. You know, I mean, that's just not my...
Yeah.
But once you open that can of worms, you've opened it. And Tony opened it with wanting to wait for the provisionals and the absentee ballots. And all of a sudden, Tony wins by 99, or not 99, by one vote.
Yeah.
And then I think even then, if you said 99 is too small a margin, there's no way you can then say one is large enough. And then we find these two ballots. And I will go out of my way to say this again. I think Steve Bean is an honorable man of integrity, but this looks bad. You can't, if you're Tony Brown, if you're Steve Bean, and there's two sealed votes with a post-it note says count these sitting down there, they forgot all about it in a one-vote race?
Yeah, I agree. Steve Bean's a great guy. He really is. I don't think there was anything intentional done. Don't put the blame on him, but you say, what happened here? I mean, something happened here, and what's going to clear this up? A recount. It doesn't make me think less of Tony or Jim Root at all.
Or just, even Steve. But I tell you, we had Jerry Stocks on the other day, and he is the lawyer for the Republican Party, so he's biased in who he's rooting for here. But he went over above and beyond to compliment Steve's integrity in this and how the process worked. But what he said to me, and I think it was even a little bit of a surprise for him, what we have learned is our system, meaning the way we use these machines and the tabulation and the judges we have, we're not capable of doing this in this close a race. And it usually doesn't matter because a candidate wins by 800 or 900 votes, and 7 or 8, 9 votes isn't going to change anything. But when it comes to this, and he was also saying they were hand counting faster than the machines were able to do. So, I mean, it's not like this is some process that's going to take months if they decide to do this. I just think they have to. I think that both guys got to stand up there like the honorable guys they have been throughout this entire election process, stand there shoulder to shoulder and say, you know, election night, Jim thought he was sheriff. A week later, I thought I was sheriff. What we have learned is this is just too close. We got to do this the right way to make sure every single vote counts. That's what the parties have all been about, right? And then we're gonna accept that decision, and we're going to move on.
Yeah, I would feel the same way if Jim Root had been sworn in and it was reversed.
Yes.
You know, Tony deserves, the public deserves a recount here. I can't remember an election that close for major in this county in 50 years that I've been published.
I don't think there has ever been.
No, and it's just, as you say, either way, whether Jim Root won by one vote, which now unofficially he probably has.
And that's, yeah. I mean, and then think about that. You know, everybody's got the hot potato disease because Josh Tanner's sworn in on Monday and they immediately ask him to just throw the results out and reissue, which, I mean, I think there's a case to be made for that. I mean, if you found these two votes, that's a 2-vote swing. And if those votes were to be counted,
Then he's the sheriff. Yeah.
But I don't think that's fair either. No. I think it's just what it has raised is enough suspicion around the process. Not that anything untoward was done in the process. It's just the process itself. You've got to go back and you've got to do this.
Well, you have to question, too, you know, did Jim Root really win by one vote? I mean, it's so close either way.
And neither one are going to know if they stand up and agree to do this. And I know there are people out there, well, Tony doesn't have to do anything. You know, he's got the office. Well, I mean, but don't you have to – do you want it that way?
Yeah.
I mean, are you know –
Well, some people do. They care.
But I don't believe – I don't – that's not Tony Brown's character.
No, that's not the Tony Brown we've seen during the campaign. And
that's not the Tony Brown I've known for 30 years. Yeah. And I just think he's getting bad advice.
Yeah. I think, as I say, I still think the world of Tony and Jim also, but – by the same token, I think it's a mistake for him to do what he's done.
I say that as a friend, Paul, and it hurts me. I mean, because both of them have been so, and I keep using the word honorable. I don't know what other word. They've both been stand-up people throughout this whole process. Don't let that process and everybody's admiration of the behavior of this process end with all this cloud.
Yeah, and to Tony's benefit, he may win by 100, 200 votes out of this.
There's
whole
no
thing.
Guarantee, right?
That's right.
But you've got to both say that hand recount will determine the winner, and we will both abide by it.
Yeah, I can't see how you do not have that.
Yeah.
You know, you have to.
Because if this goes to court, I can't believe there's not a judge, given the fact that these sealed ballots were down there. I can't believe a judge is not going to be in favor of Jim Root's lawsuit.
That'd be one of the bigger shocks I've had among many this year.
Yeah.
If the judge said, one's enough. One vote's enough. Well, and Jim Root won.
Yeah. I can't believe it. So why not get ahead of it and both come out a winner? Regardless of what
happens.
We're
all winners. We are. The whole community's a winner. I mean, whether you voted for Jim or Tony, the recount, then you will know. You will know. And we talk about that one vote counts, and, you know, we've been preaching that the last month, you know. Well, we want to make sure all votes count.
Yeah, because those two that were sitting in Steve's safe counted, too, but they weren't counted.
Yeah. Yeah, if you were one of those two, your vote didn't count until recently.
Yeah. And you know, the machines, you know, I really don't. I think that we need technology, but as we do with everything, the state's idea of technology and what they pay for, this stuff is so antiquated already. I mean, it's not even fair to call them machines. I mean, it's not like in a digital age they're actual. I mean, it's like us trying to run an office on 20-year-old computers, right? I mean, that's crazy.
If computer machines.
Yeah. But am I to believe that who in the world's using red ink or who's handing out red pens? You know, but am I to believe people went down there and took out a ballot and left the whole thing blank and turned it in? I mean, are we to believe that?
Yeah.
But there's ballots out there that are like that. Or ballots that were X'd instead of circled. You know, I mean, I'm not talking about like pregnant Chads and all the silliness in Florida from, you know, 2000. I mean, those votes that were in Steve Bean's office were Jim Root votes.
Yeah.
And they had a machine malfunction that couldn't get them to go in. But, I mean, they didn't get counted.
Yeah. Yeah. Because of the machine. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like we let stuff stand in the way of doing the right thing. And I think we've got enough of that in national politics and statewide politics. I hate to see that for local politics because I think most people running for office, and we'll segue into the mayor's thing with that, are just trying to serve the community.
Yeah, and I think when you have, as we've talked, two really dedicated and qualified people in the sheriff's race. And I guess I'm still calling it a race. Although, you know,
in my mind, it is still a race.
Yeah, and it's not over till it's over. And I just don't see anything short of a full recount resolving this. And then I guess if it comes out a tie, they flip a coin. I don't know. Can you imagine that?
No, I've thought about that, though. You know, I can't imagine it'll come out a tie. One of them, I think if you hand recount every vote in Macon County, we're going to have a winner.
Yeah, and then where else do you go? That's the ultimate.
That's it. But that's what you both have to agree. That's it. Yeah. This is the last thing, and we will go by those results. And you sign a piece of paper, handshake, whatever it is, and then you let it be done. I think it's the only way you're going to heal that office. It's the only way you're going to keep the morale. It's the only way the whoever the eventual winner would be is going to have the respect of everybody for the next 4 years.
Yeah, totally agree.
Okay. Let's segue then into the mayoral race. I am with you in that Kara did not do what Kara needed to do to be on the ballot. I don't think there's any argument about that. My argument is only in, is this really what we're keeping? I mean, shouldn't we be looking at this, you know, and looking at, you know, I hate the fact that people here locally running for an $8,000 a year job because they love the community so much get caught up in this bureaucracy.
Yeah, I like Kara. I always have liked Kara. She's highly qualified, certainly, for the office, and certainly her leadership in the community has been apparent. I saw her when she was leaving after the interview with you this morning. We talked a little bit out there in the hallway, and I know she's really down about this, and you just look at this. And, you know, I was anticipating this would be an extremely interesting race with, you know, strong candidates involved. I was shocked last week when I came in, and so I did do some digging, and you know, I did get the document. I requested a document from the city clerk's office that Kara signed, and on that document, the box was left blank, showing that she needed to do some things in order to be certified. And that's another thing. You're not really certified until this 10-day waiting period where objections can be filed is over. And during that time, and it says even on here, file with in handwritten, so that you need to you know, file with the county clerk the statement of economic interest, and then basically bring the receipt back to me. And she didn't do it, and it's unfortunate because I think this is the first time I've ever heard of a candidate not returning that receipt. There was a my understanding is there was a city council candidate this time too. That brought her statement of economic interest along with her petitions to the city clerk, and the city clerk gave her the same instructions. She did go over to Steve Bean's office and then brought the receipt back to the city clerk, and she's on the ballot. So it just seems like it's got to be more than that. It's just like you can't take a good person off, but the rules apply to everybody.
At the end of the day, Paul, I agree with you. Yeah. But I am not sure that I believe that no one knew anything about this at all for this 10-day period.
Yeah, and I just
I'm not questioning your reporting. I'm just saying I know the way politics works, and I know that the you know. And my question to you: do you feel like the clerk, and let's take this particular clerk. I'm talking about just the position, not the person. They're appointed by the mayor.
Well, with the approval of
that's an appointment by the mayor. Is that the person that should be taking the petitions of the opponent to your boss? I mean, that seems like a weird.
Well, it puts a mayor who's running for re-election in a bad position and certainly opens her up to suspicion, but that's just the way it is.
I'm not saying that there was anything nefarious here. I'm saying, is that a great idea? I mean, is there another way to do this process where you take that out of the equation?
And then you wonder, who do you file with?
No, I don't know. I mean, or maybe there's a panel, or maybe there's a couple of people in the process, because now all you have is a candidate and a clerk. And in this case, you've got she said and you've got she said. And that conversation was between them. I mean, so no one else is involved in that.
Yeah, and she said she takes each candidate in the city clerk. And I did ask her, last Friday after we talked on Thursday, because it was such a shock that, you know, I want to look deeper into this. And I did send her questions and requested the document that Kara signed saying that she understood this. And so she was given that document, and even the clerk had handwriting on it that she put on there to explain what happened. And I guess I look at this is not rocket science. It's not. You need a receipt, and it's only four or five things you need to do. And I feel really bad for Kara. I really do, still do. But at the bottom line, it's her responsibility to file. Some communities, they don't even give you a packet. You have to go out and search.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if, I just hold the city clerk, I guess, harmless in this. You can say, well, she should explain this. You know, I think the State Board of Elections and others kind of frown on you giving too much information or being too available to one candidate over another and saying, oh, you need to find
Yeah, but
this.
You yeah. said that Celeste did go down with each candidate and point by point would go over.
Well, and I assume, yeah.
Okay, but I don't know. I mean, you've got a copy of a paper that was handwritten. I wasn't there to watch that. I mean, I'm not suggesting that there was anything done after the fact. I'm just saying there's no way to prove. I mean, if somebody wanted to write that sentence in after the fact, they could. I mean,
I assume Kara would have a copy of this and she could show that.
I would ask. I'm not saying she did that. I'm just saying having a piece of paper like that up at a city hall doesn't prove that that conversation happened or not. I mean, in the packet, when it's explained, all it says is a statement of economic interest to be filed with the county clerk. There is no mention of bring the receipt. I'm just saying, I'm not saying put her on the ballot. I'm just saying, is this the kind of thing that we want to keep good people from running? Paul, she's raised $50,000 already.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. To be, she was on her way to a huge war chest in terms of the, and everyone knew that. And but I don't know. I guess until proven different, I have to say that the city clerk treated and I guess when having this document showing the city clerk wrote here saying, you know, whether it was explained or not, she did write it out and Kara signed it at the bottom, I understand. And I guess what boggles my mind is we're talking about something, and it almost goes to your point, something so minor. And yet so important because you have to get that filed.
It was filed. It's just the paper receipt from the county clerk's office wasn't brought back to the city of Decatur. We're living in a day and an age where everything I have is on a cloud. And we're talking about going to one county building and taking a paper receipt back to another. Shouldn't we be looking? I mean, is this what we want to decide whether we have a mayoral choice or not? Or the same thing? I look at it just like the air in the counting of the ballots with the sheriff's race. This isn't what local politics should be about, where a paperclip is. Why are we even still talking about paperclips in 2018?
Yeah.
Or a metal clasp?
Yeah, I just feel, you know, if it applied only to her, to Kara, it might be different. But it applied to all the candidates. I would agree with you, it's kind of old-fashioned the way you have to do it, but that's the way you have to do
what
it.
What was it about a letter was sent, you said, earlier, I thought?
I asked one of the questions I asked the city clerk after our conversation for this week's article, which, by the way, the paper, those of you who get it in mail, will get it a day late
because
the post office was closed.
George Bush.
So we couldn't mail them.
Yeah.
We had huge pileup of papers waiting to be mailed. Anyway, maybe that'll save 1,000 phone calls. Where's my paper? One of the questions I asked the city clerk, did you tell anyone else? You know, did you tell anyone else about this? And she said, I sent a letter, basically to Kara, saying that she could not be on the ballot because she could not be certified because I did not have the receipt.
Okay, and that, she said that was after, I mean, that was after the process, right?
Yeah, that was, she said the certification.
I mean, it wasn't before, it was after she said she's not on the ballot, then she sent a letter.
Yeah, because she certifies on the last day. Because up until that time, people can file objections,
sure.
You know, and that's so on the last day, when that's over, then you check to see who's certified, who's turned everything in, and that's when she sent a letter to Kara because she hadn't completed the requirements to be on the ballot. It's a shame. Kara was first. She would have been first on the ballot. But she said, I'd notified her to this day, and she sent me this on Monday, I have not notified anyone else. I just notified her by letter, and those were her words.
Notified,
direct comment. Yeah, by letter.
Okay, I guess that's the rub for me, and we'll never know. I'll take her at her word that no one knew that she was going to get kicked off the ballot. I find that hard. Just people being people, and the gossip that goes around. And by the way, I mean, I'll know if that conversation took place eventually, you know, with anybody else. You told me that, you know, it was not uncommon for the clerk to stop in the mayor's office and give you updates on who had filed or things that were going on. I just find it hard to believe all this happened in a vacuum and the only two people that knew anything about any of this were the clerk and Kara.
Yeah, I will say when Celeste Harris was the clerk and, you know, I was the mayor, you know, during 2-3 elections that took place there. Celeste would say, like, someone filed today, but she would never say whether they left anything off or
no, but that would have been a bombshell. I mean, because let's face it. I mean, the other two mayoral candidates are not going to be a challenge to Julie the way Kara would. I mean, you know, this was the race everybody was talking about. And for that to just go 9 days with no one knowing that, oh, she's not going to be in the race and she's going to be off the ballot. I just human nature makes that hard for me to believe.
Well, I can understand. I guess I can understand that because of the emotions involved, too, in this, that, you know, that you're looking forward to a top-notch mayoral race and a lot of issues being discussed
I mean,
in that.
And when you found out, you were stunned, right? I think it's just hard for me to believe that that was kept top secret.
Yeah, and that's one reason that I contacted the city clerk and asked some direct questions, requested the document that I just showed you a copy of. And said, I'd like to see that. Can you send that to me? She sent it to me. And I think Tom from the Herald Review, he must have called yesterday or something, but I posted this online a couple of days ago and started getting some reaction from it. But I guess I can't my feeling is I can't, with any evidence, blame the city clerk or blame the present mayor because I don't have any evidence.
I just
take what they say.
I'm not blaming them either. The law's the law. She's got to file. I'm not suggesting. I don't know that she can even be put back on the ballot. I would suggest to her if I'm telling you, there's been three Christmas parties in a row this weekend. This is all that anybody wants to talk about. She's got a lot of supporters out there that she look into running as a write-in candidate if that's possible. I mean, that may be her best alternative to be able to do this. I don't even know what the law is on that.
I think it's her only alternative. Just speaking, the candidates have already been certified for the ballot, because of that process.
Yeah, but that's also the arguments that Tony Brown is making.
Of what?
That he's been certified. That's why he's sheriff.
Yeah, that's entirely different.
No, but I'm saying, yeah. but
he's been sworn in.
Well, he's been certified. I mean, you know, yeah. Steve Bean certified him as the winner.
Yeah, I personally just don't see her getting back on the ballot. I think her best shot, and since she does have extremely good fundraising efforts, great at marketing and that, maybe the write-in route is the way for her to go.
I think she could take this whole thing and use it as a publicity machine.
They tried to keep me off the ballot. You know, I'm going to write in.
Who knows?
I just don't think she's going to be on the ballot.
And I agree with you. Yeah. I understand. I kind of like that she's fighting it a little bit because I kind of thought, you know, well, that was, you know, over quickly.
I think we talked when I came in the studio last time, and I kind of wondered, like, wow, that was dropping out of the race was really quick. It kind of like stunned me.
Told me this morning that because she was contacted by the Herald Review, she said an hour and a half after she found out about not being on the ballot, she felt that she didn't want, you know, she'd raised $50,000 and she didn't want those people who'd written checks to her to find out from the media.
Yeah.
She felt pressured to sort of make a decision, you know, and let them know. And she regrets making that decision. She said now she wants to at least, if nothing else, call attention to how this is done and can we not make it a different sort of process as far as or at least educate people in the future that might want to do this, that there's a real danger that you can not be on a ballot over a stupid mistake.
Well, I think after this, everyone running.
Well, everybody's going to file a receipt.
20 years.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I think also, too, the fact that she's fighting this would probably help her with a write-in campaign.
I agree.
But I just personally – could be wrong. I just don't see her getting her name on the ballot, printed on the ballot. I think it's too late. And I think otherwise, everybody else complied with the rules. You know, why should we put her on? And she didn't.
It's hard to disagree with that. We've got to take a break for the news. We get back here, Mark Tupper and Tupper on Sports City Hall inside another half hour. We'll also have our very first gift of the day coming up. Here's Jeff Daly. Don't go anywhere.
WSOY News time is 7:29. Republican Jim Root has announced plans to file a formal notice of contest and pursue civil action in the disputed Macon County Sheriff's election. Root issued a release yesterday announcing his intentions, noting it appears an adversarial lawsuit is imminent. Democrat Tony Brown, who was sworn in as sheriff on Friday, was very busy working in his office and declined to comment. In his statement yesterday, Root said he asked Brown to join him in taking the steps for a complete hand recount of all legal ballots to determine the true winner, adding that he was prepared to cover all costs. Root said that Brown intends to oppose a full hand count and that the lawsuit will generate all the acrimony, cost, and delay that follows. His statement also says he is disappointed in Mr. Brown's response to his invitation to ensure legitimacy in the election. We have more news on the way after Fox News covers the world on News Talk 1340 WSOY AM 103.3 FM, streaming live at nowdecatur.com at 7:30.
News. I'm Lillian Wu. His last wishes being carried out today when President George H.W. Bush's casket travels from Houston to College Station, Texas, where he'll be laid to rest.
Bush said, I went to war on a train. I came home on a train. I want my last trip to College Station on a train.
Fox's Will Lajeunesse. More than 11,000 people paid their respects as the 41st president lay in repose all night at a Houston church. And a political fight brewing in Wisconsin.
Lame duck legislation passed by the Republicans in the Wisconsin State House would limit the powers of the incoming governor. Governor-elect Tony Evers, a Democrat, says he's not taking it lying down.
We're exploring anything to make sure that this legislation does not get into practice.
Republican Wisconsin State Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says it's not a power grab.
Fox's Tanya J. Powers. This is Fox News.
WSOY News Time is 7:31. The giving nature of the holiday season showed through yesterday as United Way Executive Director Debbie Bogle announced the organization expects to meet its fundraising expectations. We're on target to meet our $1.6 million goal, Bogle said. The announcement came during the holiday-themed Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce Business After Hours celebration held here last night at the Newhoff Media offices. It was also held in conjunction with the annual Christmas Walk in downtown Decatur. Bogle highlighted some of the notable contributions to this year's campaign, leading with Caterpillar seeing a $140,000 increase in donations. BKD had a 100% participation and raised $17,000. Tate and Lyle had a 28% participation increase and a 31% dollar amount increase. And Jackson Ford brought in more than $3,300 during their drive-a-thon promotion. You can find a full video of last night's Christmas walk as well at nowdecatur.com. Sports: Fighting Illini fell to Ohio State 77-67. Illinois Chicago beating Illinois State 94-75. And we have St. Teresa Bulldog basketball tonight as they take on Meridian in the Macon County Boys Basketball Tournament at Maroa. We'll have that for you coming your way starting at 7 o'clock tonight after Sport Talk with Mark Tupper and Tim Kane. More news is up at the top of the hour. I'm Jeff Daly in the WSOY Newsroom for Newhoff Media, media made locally.
Brinkhotter & Associates is proud to present the Bright Bulbs Holiday Decorating Contest. To enter, simply upload an image of your externally decorated home or business at brinkhotter.com. Then, share your entry across social media and drum up votes. Join the fun and enter your photo for a chance to win a $500 Visa gift card and other exciting prizes. One lucky residential entry will win the People's Choice Prize for the most community votes before December 17th at midnight. The Brinkhotter & Associates Bright Bulbs Contest.
I'm Jen Wood from Maroa Lumber Company. At Maroa Lumber, we carry more than just top quality grade lumber. We feature high performing brands like Anderson, Wadena, CHI, and Milwaukee. We also carry composite decking, molding, and trim, siding materials, garage doors, Pratt & Lambert paint, and so much more. At Maroa Lumber, we offer free estimates and takeoffs on any job. Whether it's a small project or building your dream home, Maroa Lumber has the knowledgeable staff to get the job done. Visit us at MaroaLumber.com or give us a call, 794-2226.
Your WSOY three-day weather forecast. We've got snow coming in. Could see 1 to 2 inches possible and additional flurries. Then with highs around 34 degrees. Then for tonight, mostly clear, lows around 17. Friday, sunny, highs near 28. And Saturday, mostly sunny, highs near 31 degrees. It is 35 degrees in downtown Decatur.
Tupper on Sports on WSOY 1340 AM and 103.3 FM. Streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
Back with the City Hall Insider, just a couple of minutes. Right now, it's time to check in with Mark Tupper and Tupper on Sports. Good morning, sir. Let's start with the Cardinals.
Good morning, Brian. Well, for a while now, Arizona first baseman Paul Goldschmidt has been the hot name in terms of a winter acquisition for the Cardinals. And yesterday that happened when the Cardinals traded to acquire a guy who is nearly perfect for what they've been trying to do, to add some muscle to the middle of the batting order and improve their defense on the infield. And I say nearly perfect because all things being equal, I think they'd prefer he was a left-handed hitter. He's not. He's a righty. But still, there's just so much to like about Paul Goldschmidt. He is a really elite, dangerous, consistent hitter and a Gold Glove caliber first baseman who will pair with last season's acquisition, Marcelo Zuna, to give them a formidable 1-2 punch in the middle of their lineup. He's 31 years old. He's a six-time All-Star. He has feasted on National League Central pitching. Really, he's hit well against everybody. He'll make $14.5 million this year, then be a free agent in 2019. To get him, the Cardinals gave up Carson Kelly, who for years has been portrayed as Yadier Molina's heir apparent at catcher. But, you know, he's been blocked by Yadi because he never comes out of the lineup. And frankly, Carson Kelly's yet to show the potential the organization has talked about. We haven't seen really any power from him. We haven't seen anything defensively that makes you just, you know, really go crazy. Maybe he blossoms out of Yadi's shadow in Arizona. They also gave up pitcher Luke Weaver, who certainly has potential. He started strong last year, kind of faded, was passed up by Jack Flaherty. And the Cardinals also gave up a minor league infielder, Andy Young. So Paul Goldschmidt is the new first baseman, really gives the Cardinals a strong defensive right side of the infield with Colton Wong at second base. And it moves Matt Carpenter from first base over to third base, where his glove is okay, but his arm is subpar. Still really good deal for the Cardinals. This makes them better. They need to re-sign him for 2019 and beyond. That's understood. And all of this in advance of next week's winter meetings in Las Vegas, where more deals will get done. I really like this trade. People got excited last year when they signed Marcelo Ozuna. Paul Goldschmidt, in my opinion, is a much better player than Marcelo Ozuna.
All right, on the other side of the break, we'll talk a little Illini basketball and a preview of tonight's Sport Talk. This Look at Tupper on Sports is brought to you by Noah's Plumbing.
Merry Christmas from Noah's Plumbing. For over 7 years, Macon County has trusted Noah's for all of their plumbing needs. 2019 promises to be the best year yet. Beginning January 2nd, Noah's will be launching our new HVAC division. The expertise and integrity that you are accustomed to for your plumbing will also be available for all your heating and cooling needs. From residential to commercial, 201-NOAH will be the number to call. That's 201-6624. From drips to floods, whether hot or cold, you can count on Noah.
Back here with Mark Tupper and Tupper on Sports. All right, the Illini.
Illinois went to Chicago last night looking to show improvement from their disappointing showing in Nebraska on Sunday. And they did that with more fight and more production from guard Trent Frazier. But they played this kind of herky-jerky game where they were very good in spurts, then very bad in spurts. And that does not allow you to sustain the level of play you need to beat a top 20 team. And Ohio State won the game 77-67. Illinois was largely outplayed, I would say, for the first 13 minutes of the game, and wondered if they might just fade away as they did at Nebraska. But in one of their best spurts of the season, Illinois cranked it up on defense, and for a nearly seven-minute stretch, the Buckeyes did not make a basket and committed, I think, eight turnovers in that stretch. And as a result, Illinois took the lead, and they were up 38-34 at the half. But Ohio State took charge immediately when the second half began, and despite a couple of runs, Illinois could not get that lead back again. Here's what I liked and what I didn't like. I liked that Trent Frazier was more aggressive, and he finished with 18 points and 5 rebounds. I liked that Kipper Nichols got involved and played his best game of the season. He also had 18 points. I like that they forced 19 Ohio State turnovers, and I like that they got to the free throw line, and they made free throws. Illinois was 23 of 27 from the line. I didn't like the continuing trend to foul and to foul carelessly and at times foolishly. Exhibit A would be Georgie Bishanashvili, who at the time had 4 fouls. He's hedging defensively 30 feet from the basket and bangs into a guy and picks up his 5th foul. He's out of the game on a foul 30 feet from the basket that is inconsequential, just silly. And I did not like the lack of offense beyond Trent Frazier and Kipper Nichols. Io, 1 of 9 field goals. Andres Feliz, 1 of 6. Georgie, 1 of 3. That's 3 of 18 from those guys. But they did fight. You know, if you saw late, Trent Frazier went down, crashed to the ground, landed on his back. I thought he might have broken his tailbone. He was in great pain. They had to help him to the locker room. And in like about a minute, he popped back out and got back in the game, tried to help them at the stretch. I liked that. That was the kind of toughness that you're looking for. So it's a tough stretch, obviously. They have not played at home in 2 weeks. They take the home floor at the State Farm Center at 1 o'clock on Saturday against UNLV. And Sport Talk tonight from 5 to 7, Tim Kaine and I will be in the studio. We'll talk about that Cardinals trade and about some other baseball things going on. And it looks like Mitchell Trubisky will be back for the Bears as their starting quarterback Sunday night against the Rams.
All right, Mark, have a great day. We'll check in with you first thing tomorrow morning. On the other side of the break, our very first gift of the day today. And we'll have another two segments with the City Hall insider, Paul Osborne. Stay tuned. Time now for the Marquee Coffee Break. Fresh roasting coffee locally indicated for over 30 years. Marquee Coffee, the official drink of choice for discerning coffee drinkers everywhere. The magic is in their beans.
Did you know the greatest opportunity for economic growth comes from existing businesses? Hi, I'm Tim Stone, and Decatur Memorial Hospital is an investor in the Economic Development Corporation. The EDC can help your company grow through small business development services, customized market research, and data analysis. Your business expansion could be eligible for tailored incentives. Learn more at DecaturEDC.com or call 217-422-9520. We are the Economic Development Corporation of Decatur and Macon County, and we are limitless.
Staley Credit Union is at it again with the latest and greatest in sweet technology. It's called Card Valet, and it's an app for your phone that's going to change the way you use your credit and debit cards. You can turn your card on or off, set spending limits based on locations or shops, get real-time alerts when your car is used or declined, basically have complete control of your card right from your phone. Go to staleycu.com now to learn more. This institution is not federally insured by Member Choice, proudly insured by American Share Insurance.
Tis the season for giving, and this year you can own the holiday gift exchange when you shop at Kozire Harley-Davidson. We've got everything from the bike and beyond, from poker chips to the perfect ride. You'll be able to find something for everyone on your list at Kozire Harley-Davidson. Never stopped in before? No worries. Our awesome staff will show you around and help you find a kick-ass gift for the Harley lover in your life. Shop Kozire Harley-Davidson, just off Route 51 in Forsyth.
The holidays are a special time to reflect upon the blessings in our lives and how we might share those blessings with others in our community. This is Natalie Beck of the Community Foundation of Macon County. At the Community Foundation, we help individuals, families, and companies realize their charitable dreams to make a difference in their community. At the Community Foundation, we offer flexible vehicles for giving to programs that serve youth, families, education, music, arts, and recreation, conservation, and other interest areas that you may care about. Many of our donors support multiple organizations in the community, yet they only have to write one check for charitable giving. Their donation to the Community Foundation goes into their donor advice fund. From there, the donors act as advisors to the foundation to make grants to the organizations they choose to support. For more information about donor advice funds and the other donor services offered by the Community Foundation, call today, 429-3000.
Santa's coming to town!
Santa! Oh my God!
All right, Lindsay, you're going to have to help me out here because I don't have hair. It's the Dolly Bliss Salon and Boutique. They're located at 160 West Wood Street in downtown Decatur. You can go to Dolly Bliss. That's DALIBliss.com. They're a salon and a boutique, right?
Yes, indeed.
So tell me about it.
It's actually a beautiful space. It's brand new over on Wood Street, and they have unique items. And this is the great thing about boutique is they only carry so many. When it's gone, it's gone.
And they bring new stuff in.
And then they bring new stuff in.
All their clothing, jewelry, and accessories are hand-selected with you in mind. They have years of experience, are thoughtful and attentive to your needs and all of their services. They want you to have an exclusive look and unique style. Their sizing ranges from small to 3X. You don't have to worry about wearing the same thing as someone else at the party at their boutique, because once the item sells out, they do not reorder. Their motto is, you better get it before it runs out.
I love that.
Like one of a kind,
yes,
right?
Yes, indeed.
Most of the jewelry at Dolly Bliss Salon and Boutique is handmade by local artisans. They carry a variety of styles of jewelry, from simple everyday pieces to special occasion pieces. With Dolly Bliss, it's also a full-service salon. The staff at Dolly Bliss Salon and Boutique, experienced, thoughtful. Whether you need a routine haircut or an expert hairstyling for a special event, you can always count on their artist for all of your hair care needs. Services also include makeup application, blowouts, updo services, skin and hair care products, and spray tanning. So what makes this the newest Decatur business very special? Visit them today and see. They are amazing. Full
yes.
One-stop shop. People have holiday parties.
Oh, my gosh. And, you know, whenever I happened to go in there, and there were, like, it was packed with people shopping and also getting their hair done and getting their holiday look taken care of.
Maybe a little gossip going on.
A little bit,
yes.
Maybe.
I love it.
It's a beautiful space, too.
I like that the idea that downtown is now expanding out. And we see that with even the decorations and the lighting with the IBEW and our whole Deck the Town thing.
Mm-hmm.
So check out Dolly Bliss Salon and Boutique. 160 West Wood Street, Decatur, Illinois, or dollybliss.com. You can go to our Facebook page right now. We have a post up. We're giving away a $100 gift card today, and they're also part of our $3,200 shopping spree we're giving away right before Christmas. So go to the Now Decatur Facebook page, go to the Deck the Town section of NowDecatur.com or the Now Decatur app, and you can go to Dolly Bliss and find their code word to get extra attempts to win that big package. Our gift of the day, Dolly Bliss Salon and Boutique. Paul Osborne, the City Hall insider in the studios here today. I love the fact that the downtown corridor is starting to reach out with these businesses.
Yeah, the footprint print keeps getting bigger. It's a big foot.
Yeah.
but those buildings over there, too, they look so great.
Mm-hmm.
They do. This deserted buildings.
Absolutely.
And that for a long
you got
time.
The Andreas's and One Main, you know, doing some expansion in residential. And I think that, you know, when you're running out of downtown and downtown starts spreading out and you think about that, it getting even further west towards Millican. All of those years ago, yeah, I know you had a lot of this in your mind when thinking about this redesign of downtown. It must be, nice to sort of see it all unfold.
Yeah, it's nice to see people invest in downtown and believe in the downtown and believe in Decatur that much, and certainly business owners saying, yeah, I want to be downtown too. But you drive along that street now and look over, and it's just so different. It's just really beautiful.
Yeah, I love it. Absolutely love it. All right, so shaping up now, we now know what the ballot will look like. We're not going to have a primary. We didn't, you know, check the box of too many candidates, so I think that's a good thing. Saves the county clerk money because they don't really have that in a budget. They've just got to come up with it. Are you, after all of this stuff with the sheriff's race and heading into this municipal race, what are your thoughts about voting today? I mean, I know that the politicians will pass these laws and these unfunded mandates, and the county clerk, and now Josh is going to have to deal with what Steve had to deal with for the last 30 years. I don't think there's cheating going on, but I'm just not as sure we're getting what we're paying for.
Yeah, it's hard. Well, because, as you mentioned, we've had to have primaries in the past before you changed the number of candidates you needed.
Which just made sense.
Yeah. Well, if you had three candidates for mayor, you had to have a primary to eliminate one of them.
Yeah.
For $30,000-$40,000, and
for an $8,000 a year job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like you look at that, and you feel that maybe elections and that should keep step with the times. You know, I mean, we have, most of the new candidates today are people that are familiar with technology and a lot of the new...
Don't you think eventually it has to? I mean, I'm kind of a Luddite voting. I want a paper ballot and I want to fill it out. But when you talk about all of this, whether it's the filing, whether it's the running, it's the counting of the votes, there has to be... No one else is running their business this way, right?
Well, and still be in business.
Yeah. Right.
Those are the empty buildings.
And we're not using 20-year-old equipment, and we're not using... And I'm not blaming anyone. I'm just... When will they get serious about really doing all of this in a more effective, user-friendly way?
Probably when money becomes more available for that type of thing.
The money... I mean, if you went paperless and you did everything, I mean, wouldn't that eventually pay for itself because of the lack of cost involved in maintenance and machines? And I guess I've always argued against this, and maybe I'm just sort of coming full swing that it's inevitable. I mean, we don't print pictures anymore. You know, we put them in the cloud. I mean, think about your day-to-day life. Are you doing anything the way we do elections today?
No, probably not. And maybe it's because a lot of the people that vote in elections are still
a certain age,
certain age where they're much more comfortable without the technology and just voting the way they used to. And usually this issue comes up, too, during an election. It's got to be an easier way to do this. It's got to be an easier way to get candidates who are qualified, you know, on the ballot. But I guess the bottom line is whenever they make the change, hopefully they will in my lifetime, you know, it's still going to apply to everybody. So whether it's the old way or a new way, there's still a set of rules you have to follow, whether you're running for sheriff or any other office.
You got to follow the rules. You do. And at the end of the day, I think you and I agree more than we disagree on this. I think the only thing about this whole mayoral thing that still sticks in my craw a little bit is, you know, when you ask the question of the city clerk, did anyone else know? She said, you know, I notified the candidate, and I didn't, and that was the only person I notified. That's a very official word to use. That doesn't mean that no one else knew about it. And I just find it impossible to believe. And I have absolutely no proof, and this is just on my, you know, 23 years of doing this, that no one up in that city hall knew that that candidate was going to get knocked off that ballot. I mean, I find it impossible to believe, but I have no proof to tell you that that's what happened. Notified is a very specific word.
Yeah, I think what it was, notified that she wasn't certified to be on the ballot or something like that. And I would agree with a lot of the stuff you're saying, too, but you know, we have proof, and the candidate admitted also it was my mistake. The bottom line you can't get around is I didn't do what I should have done.
Right, and that doesn't mean she should be on the ballot. I'm just saying I find it impossible to believe that the only two people that knew that they were, I mean, or the only one person that knew that she was getting off the ballot is the city clerk. That's a small office up there. And, I mean, I know it's got to go through legal, right?
I would think, I can't say for sure. I would think to make sure that she's on legal ground.
Particularly first time going through an election process.
But I can't say, I didn't really ask her that question, but it could have happened. Yeah. I would think if it's my first time, I would have, and I'm speaking from experience, personal experience, I would have contacted legal to make sure, have I done this right?
Yeah.
Now what I do, I notify, but I don't know that happened.
All right. We'll probably never know. No. Okay. It's been crazy. I tell you, I thought we were done with the election. I thought it was time for like Christmas and holidays, and yet we're both.
Yeah, you're getting tired. It's just like wearing you out.
It is. It's been a good week. I want to thank all the folks once again. We were able to go over to Taylorville yesterday morning to their Taylorville food pantry and present the $50,000 check to them. And I really thought we were going over there just to meet with the pantry people. And the reason we wanted to drive over there was to give them the money so they could immediately go to work. And the mayor was there, and the county sheriff was there, and the county board chairman, and they could not have been more grateful. I just want to pass along once again our thanks to all of you. The generosity of this community is there's nowhere that's better. I really believe that.
You know, we talk about like the controversy from elections and that, but you also think about just the funeral and all the good things that came out from our former late President Bush. Of, you know, kind of everybody getting together and just kind of honoring the man.
And if the media would have done that with the same grace and class in which he lived his life, our country would be better. But you could see they couldn't help but make that about Trump instead of just taking the message that the Bush family was putting out there. This is, you know, there was a time, and Trump's to blame for a lot of this. I mean, Trump and George H.W. Bush were complete opposites.
Yeah.
One had all kinds of class and grace and served his country with the honor. The other one's a blowhard that wouldn't know class if it hit him in the face. but the media does the same thing, and they did it all day yesterday.
You're exactly right. But I think people, at least I found myself.
But everybody else saw that Bob Dole moment and reacted to that with the way they should have. To be honest with you, Paul, I didn't know Bob Dole was still alive.
Yeah.
But you watch that on social media, and the overwhelming reaction to that, just showing that basic, and the people coming together Tuesday morning to raise $50,000 in 3 hours, that's what most people do.
Yeah, that's such a good point. That, you know, we talk about controversies, and we talk about the national media and that, but, you know, here in Central Illinois and all over the United States, really, in Central Illinois, you know, okay, all that negative stuff, there's a need. People respond here. Really good, decent.
Yeah. And when it comes down to it, nobody cares whose house has got a D or an R in front
of
it. It's about rebuilding a community.
It's helping.
Absolutely.
Helping people.
So anyway, I just wanted to pass along again to all of those who donated and helped. And a big thank you to the United Way for staffing that morning and running all the credit card transactions. They were very, very grateful there in Taylorville.
Well, that's a good work.
Just know that money's already on the ground getting used.
Well, I think you do such a good job when something like this happens of kind of bringing people together. Someone has to do that, and you do a great job of that. All of a sudden, there's a need there, and you help with that need. And I'm not sure a lot of this stuff would get done unless you – I think people will give if they know how to give, if they know how to contribute. They want to help people out there. How do I do that? You provide that.
Well, those very kind of you to say, Paul. I just we're a vehicle. You know, for whatever reason, we've gotten the reputation to be that vehicle, and people started reaching out to us on Sunday. You know, I think when the daylight hit and people could actually see the destruction and the devastation, people said, "Hey, what are you going to do? What are you going
to
do?"
They look to you to do that.
Yeah, and we thankfully have, you know, people like Debbie Bogle and the United Way, where we can, you know, immediately get a phone bank staff working and a way to get, you know, stuff up, and, you know, you got to get artwork created and stuff for the, you know, website, and we are surrounded by really good people that are able to do that. And we hit the phones on Tuesday morning starting at 6. Congressman Davis was in with us. And by the way, some people sent me some pictures of Congressman Davis with a chainsaw, literally cutting a tree off a house down there in Taylorville. And for the cartoon character, you know, these campaigns turn these people into, I would suggest you kind of look a little deeper into somebody and ask the people of Taylorville if that's the way they feel about him, because he was there for his hometown. And you know, he got choked up a couple of times in here just describing people he knew that were going to need the help, and friends and family. And it was nice to sort of see Roddy Davis, just the human being, not Roddy Davis, the politician.
It was extra personal for him. It was because he knew so many of these people, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Taking the last break, back to wrap it up with the City Hall Insider. Here is Lindsay Romano with your WSOY three-day forecast.
Expecting a little bit of snow, could see 1 to 3 inches with additional flurries and highs near 34 degrees. Then for tonight, clear lows around 17. Friday, sunshine, highs near 28. And Saturday, mostly sunny, highs near 31. It is 35 degrees in downtown Decatur.
Patients receiving a total knee replacement at HSHS St. Mary's Hospital are now available to go home the same day of surgery. Traditionally, a joint replacement requires 1 to 3 nights in the hospital, but now patients in overall good health and who have the right support system can recover in the comfort of their own homes. Our goal is to get you home for dinner and back to life faster. Ask your physician if this is the right option for you. St. Mary's is Decatur's leader in same-day total knee replacement.
There's a moment where time stands still, where history meets destiny. The past isn't behind us because we stand on the shoulders of giants. We will always be the Fighting Illini. Order the Fighting Illini 4-pack today for $49 as the Fighting Illini host Grand Canyon on December 30th at 3 p.m. Call 1-866-ILLINI1 or visit FightingIllini.com today.
This Friday, join News Channel 20 and Fox Illinois for the joy of sharing.
We need your donations of food, toys, or cash to support the Eastern and Central Illinois Food Banks, Toys for Tots, the Ronald McDonald House, and the Red Cross to help those devastated by last weekend's tornadoes.
Make your donations at the Walmart in Danville or any of our Walmart locations in Springfield.
Learn more at newschannel20.com or at foxillinois.com. The joy of sharing this Friday, 5 a.m. to 6:30 p.m.
If you're looking for a bank with a metric boatload of cool features like mobile bill pay, debit and credit card monitoring phone apps, and amazing loan rates, then you should take a look at Staley Credit Union. Because it turns out the best bank in town isn't a bank at all. So take a digital stroll over to staleycu.com to learn more. This institution is not federally insured by Member Choice, proudly insured by American Share Insurance.
All right, Paul, we're wrapping it up. If you missed any of the City Hall Insider, full podcast available at Nowdecatur.com, the Nowdecatur app, or wherever you get your podcast. It's presented by Jurger Pediatric Dentistry, where beautiful smiles begin. It was a great night last night for downtown Decatur. Christmas Walk was just packed.
Oh, yeah. Cars were saying, where can I park?
I know. I left at 7 o'clock. People were still driving and around. It's good to see all the folks enjoying downtown Decatur.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll always be thankful and grateful to you and your leadership for making all that happen.
There are a lot of people.
Yeah, I know. But it was your vision and carried out through Tuna's reign as mayor. And it's great to see it in action. Paul, we'll see you next week.
Sounds
Paul
great.
Osborne, City Hall Insider. We'll take a top-of-the-hour news break. Stay tuned.